Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today, this podcast is a really special one because we're talking about perimenopause, menopause, and menopause is having a moment. And these two women in the room are some of the biggest movers and shakers in the menopause world. I want to introduce you to Dr. Kathleen Jordan and Joanna Strober. And Kathleen is Chief Medical Officer at MidiHealth. This is the nation's largest menopause care platform. And there's hundreds of physicians serving women in all 50 states. It's virtual telehealth. This is revolutionary because no one's trained on menopause in med school and residency. And I feel like there's been such a scarcity. So this resource is incredible. So she is definitely a leader in women's startups. She's serving women now at MidiHealth, and her career has been highlighted by doing telehealth services at other hospitals, getting health equity leadership certification to the hospital and its programs over at St. Francis Hospital. She's then joined a founding team at MidiHealth, and her expertise has been seen in the Washington Post, CNN, International, Yahoo News, People Magazine, many others. She is a UCLA graduate. UCLA and then Stanford University, and MidiHealth has had such fantastic growth since it started in 2021. This year, it was recognized by Forbes and LinkedIn as a leading startup to watch. Yeah, so welcome, Kathleen. Great. And Joanna Strober, she's the founder of MidiHealth. She's this, again, the virtual care platform for perimenopause and menopause. This is really amazing because it's covered by insurance. So many times people have to go outside of their healthcare network, and in this case, you don't. Before founding MIDI, Joanna co-founded Curbo. It's a first digital therapeutic for childhood obesity, which was scaled to help tens of thousands of children worldwide. And this was successfully sold to Weight Watchers in 2018. But she's done more than 20 years in direct private equity and venture capital investing for health and consumer companies, and including companies like Blue Nile, eToys, Baby Center, Hot Jobs, and Flycast. So she's the author of the book, Getting to 50-50, a primer on how women can succeed and thrive at work and home. And she, in 2023, was named to Forbes 50 Over 50 list of top innovators. Yay! That's so excellent. Welcome to the podcast, both of you.
Thank you.
We were so lucky we got to meet at Chalene Johnson's Camp Be More, which was one of the first of its kind meetings that I've ever been to, where an audience of public-facing women, just normal girls, came to listen to a bunch of experts talk because they couldn't get enough health information from their own provider networks. What'd you guys think of that?
Oh my God, it was amazing. The energy in the room was actually really fun. And people were interested in meeting each other, sharing each other's stories, and I think there was a lot of healing just in that.
I think so. And then MidiHealth was a big sponsor of the meeting. Mm-hmm. What was the thinking behind that, joining that enterprise?
We want to reach all women. I think a lot of times, a lot of the menopause influencers are very focused on the very elite women, and at MIDI we really care deeply about reaching all women, and so this is an amazing audience of people from all over the country in different walks of life and different professions and experiences that all came together to talk about their bodies and what was happening in their bodies and get advice on how they could thrive better.
Now, what made you decide to start MIDI? Did you guys yourselves have any personal experience with not getting enough information about perimenopause? Because I know I did.
No one would give me hormones.
Honestly,
I was in my 40s and having all the symptoms of perimenopause, sleep issues, anxiety issues, whole lots of issues. I was going to marriage therapy, and no one said, oh, this could all be related to your hormones and perimenopause. So I was, as I said, going to therapy. I got sleep advice, and they gave me sleeping pills, and no one told me that all of these symptoms I was experiencing were related to my hormones. So it took years to get the right care, and I'm just determined so other women don't have to do that.
I think that's so important. I remember a conversation going to my own internist who I've known for 20 years, and I was like, well, I really think I should do something because, you know, I just don't feel wanting to be intimate, and I always love that romantic feeling, and maybe my hormones are changing. She was like, no, this is the path of life. When your hormones go down, you just follow it, and you just kind of like let go of that part of your life. You're starting the next phase. I was like shocked. I was so shocked. But that really is the thinking out there, isn't it, Kathleen?
It is. I was an executive, a chief medical officer in the healthcare system, and well, you know what doctors do, right? We become our own doctors. So
Yeah.
So and then I thought, okay, things are getting real now. I'm going to have someone else care for me.
Yeah.
So I signed up and I went to the head of the department.
Yeah.
And they gave me the worst advice. They did not recommend hormone therapy. They basically kind of shrugged. So after the meeting, I sent them actually the guidelines, and she was a friend of mine. She's actually an excellent OB-GYN, right? So it's not a matter, it's really sort of a matter of interest and whether that's the focus of your practice. And I was like, here's the guidelines. I think I didn't get that. And she replied, I know, menopause isn't my thing.
Oh, jeez.
So I, well, I think it's
been so untrendy. I really feel the word needs a rebrand. The word menopause is just not the right word for this.
So important that you say that. I want. We were flying down here today, and one of the women working on the airline saw my shirt saying menopause is hot, and she laughed and she said, "Ah, oh, I went through that and it's over." And I thought that's so sad because actually, the changes in your body, they're not over. And if you think that it's over, then you're actually not going to take care of yourself. And there are so many things that can be done that you continue to thrive, that you don't need to think, oh, menopause is over, so therefore what, my body's finished? Like, it's a very weird thought process.
Yeah.
So I think it does need a rebrand. I think we need a new word.
We need to sexy it up.
Yes, exactly. We need to sexy it up. And we need to help people understand that it's actually just aging, ovarian aging, and that's a long process, and there's a lot we can do early. It's never too early to start, but honestly, it's also not too late to start. I think that's really important.
I think it's so interesting that human beings are one of the few organisms in the world, like in the mammalian world, that undergo menopause. Like, it's just whales and humans.
Yeah.
The rest of the mammals out there don't have menopause. They stay reproductively active until their eggs just, you know, exhaust, which tends to be very much longer than in humans. So there's some new research that kind of suggests that ovarian aging echoes the senescence of the person in general. And that if we can delay ovarian aging, that we can maybe increase lifespan for women. Have you guys heard of any of this?
We have. It's fascinating, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's actionable right now for the...
For people listening, yeah.
Yeah, but it's fascinating. And there are actually a lot of actionable things you can do, right? You can take hormone therapy. Not that it's the answer for everyone, but it's the answer for more people than currently access it, I think.
Well, I think, Kathleen, I want to ask you this very important question. There's been a lot of fear historically tied to hormone replacement therapy, especially following the WHI study. And can you clarify what's myth and what's fact when it comes to risks like that, like breast cancer, stroke, cardiovascular?
Absolutely. So the great part about the WHI study, it came out around 2001, it started in the 1990s, and there was an early report that there were, in one of the arms, there were six arms of the study, in one of the arms, there were eight more cases of breast cancer. What they didn't put on the front line of the headline is that the estrogen-only arm had massive 20% less breast cancer.
Wow.
And then the average age of the women in these studies was 72. And that one arm of the study took a synthetic progesterone. So most people that know the details of that know that estrogen doesn't cause breast cancer, period. The other, even that arm of the study, those women were studied and there was a follow-up report 2010, 2020. So even in that arm, they had no higher mortality, no higher breast cancer risk. And there have been copious studies across, a lot of them coming out of Europe because you have a lot of national databases. So if you look at all the women in France that take hormone replacement therapy, they don't have more breast cancer. If you look at all the people in Denmark that take hormone replacement therapy, they don't have more breast cancer. So that has been a concern because it's a concern that women have, but it is probably the biggest held misconception out there for both clinicians and for patients.
It really is. And what, have they started teaching differently now in residency programs and OB-GYN and in med school? Because I don't think they have.
Well, 85% of OB-GYNs say they don't get any teaching in menopause. So there was no teaching. And then for a lot of people that are entering the menopause era, they sort of leave OB-GYN and then later in their career focus on menopause. So they were really educated in med school 20 years ago, right? I do think that menopause is having a moment, and we do see programs starting to talk about menopause more. I just actually gave a med school lecture on it at USC, mm-hmm. right? So there is an increasing amount of interest in it. So I'm hopeful that the new generations, but it's not just OB-GYNs that have to hear about it. Like, you're a plastic surgeon. Facial plastics. Yeah. Right? So it definitely affects what you do, but it causes dry eye, right? So mm-hmm. ophthalmologists need to know it. Mm-hmm. It causes a frozen shoulder. Orthopedists need to know about it. Right? It causes changes everywhere.
Every organ system.
Yeah, cardiovascular disease. It makes your lipids go up, your cholesterol go up. It like changes. I think every specialist needs to be trained. I think what we're seeing now is at least OB-GYNs are getting a little bit more training. But I do think every specialist needs to know.
I think that's so true. Every single cell has receptors for estrogens in your body.
Every single
from
cell.
From the skin to the brain to the GI tract, everywhere. So fascinating. And I feel like that we had a peak, the initial early attention about getting hormones peaked with women come into my office talking about pellets and getting bioidentical pellets inserted and really special concoction, lots of lab testing. And hopefully a lot of patients now understand there's so many better other options available. Like pellet therapy is difficult to manage and very, very expensive. And that made that seem even more inaccessible. And I think you guys at MIDI want to make hormones available for every woman very easily, even if they come from a doctor who knows nothing.
Yeah, so I mean, in the end, most hormones are actually covered by insurance.
Yes.
It shouldn't be something that you just buy on the internet. It's actually something that you should work with your provider to understand what's right for you. And it's an iterative process. You might try one strength, it might not work, you might try another strength. Mm-hmm. But in the end, all of that is covered by insurance. So if you have a commercial insurance program, your insurance will pay for your hormones. Mm-hmm. And the goal should be to find a provider who can iterate with you to get the right concoction of, you know, mm-hmm. estrogen, progesterone, and for many women, testosterone, so that you have the right things to take.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, in looking at my own hormones, I was so compelled to just like get on the MIDI platform and do it, because like for me to go and research all the OB-GYNs at my local hospital who have been delivering babies for 20 years, delivered 4 of my babies, and to figure out which one of those actually has the skill set, it was like too much. It felt like overwhelming. Like instead, I just want to go to a place where they start with a culture of everyone has access, everyone needs hormones.
Yeah.
And like all the hormones are right here in one telehealth meeting.
It's also all we do. Like,
it is all we do.
That's all we do. Yeah, so
it's a lot, Joanna.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, you know, the truth is, I don't think we need to criticize OB-GYNs because they're really busy doing other things.
Yeah.
So they can't spend their life doing the research that we're doing, that you're doing every day to understand all the new research that comes out about hormones or about different, you know, different things that are happening to women's bodies, because they just don't have time. So the fact that this is all we do means that we can really be good at it.
Well, and it covers a lot of specialties. I think the biggest issues for women in menopause are not the hot flashes and night sweats. In fact, our most common physical complaint is actually the metabolic changes. Is weight gain, but also your cholesterol goes up, your mm-hmm. get central weight gain.
You become rectangular.
Yeah.
No waste, you just get a rectangle.
You go from a pear to an apple. But also sleep changes, right? So if you think about, an OB-GYN is not trained in sleep changes, skin and hair changes.
So what
we've done is combined all the specialties in one place, and we mm-hmm. support our clinicians with these specialists. They're all behind the scenes giving them the best care, so it's kind of cool.
That's very cool. So women can just join, get on the platform, all 50 states, make an appointment, and then get drugs delivered to their home.
Yeah, that's right.
With through your insurance.
Exactly.
So estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone?
Testosterone is not covered by insurance, but we have testosterone.
So you can get it and pay out of pocket
Absolutely.
For it. And
yeah.
is that pretty easily accessible? I've also found it's very difficult to get testosterone prescribed.
It is very difficult. We have it in 15 states right now. We are working on the rest of the states. It is they make it incredibly complicated and unnecessarily complicated to do the testosterone, but we do have it in 15 states.
In our largest state, so we cover about 80% of the population, because it's California, Texas, New York, the bigger
states. Okay, well that's great. And is it mostly testosterone creams?
We only do cream.
Creams, yeah. Okay, that's great. What are some other issues that you guys have discovered that women have trouble with in, at MIDI? Going through, seeing the experience.
The list.
Wait, first of all, how many patients do you guys see in a week with MIDI?
About 15,000 patients a week.
I think that's insane. That's such a great number.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank
you. Because
that
just shows that you filled a demand. You met a demand that has not had any help for, you know, for patients. This is a great resource.
We are growing quickly. I think that the truth is there's just not enough care in this country. And so women are coming to us because they don't have local care.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they are coming to us, you know, for a whole plethora of things, right? Whether it's sleep, sexual health issues.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot of questions, and we can be there to help them.
That's amazing. And then what kind of follow-up do patients get? Is that very much dependent on the patient provider? They'll decide to recheck in 2 months, 1 month?
Usually people come about 3 to 4 times a year.
Okay.
That's the right amount of time.
Yeah.
So it takes titrating. It takes some iterating. You know, for me, I tried a patch. It was 0.5. I wasn't quite sleeping as well, so then I went to a little higher, and then
mm-hmm.
I was on progesterone, and I wanted to up that a little bit to sleep better, and then I added some other things. So I joke we have a lot of concoctions,
mm-hmm.
But we have a lot of supplements also that we can add. So there's a cortisol manager. I have some stress in my life and some cortisol surges.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a cortisol manager that MIDI prescribed. It's a combination of ashwagandha, L-theanine, and magnesium. And that actually really helped me with my sleep
mm-hmm.
And anxiety. And then, you know, we have other, so we're basically helping figure out, you know, using both supplements and medication, what are the right concoctions to help you.
That's amazing. And then you were also telling us at this Let Can't Be More meeting that you guys were branching out into one other direction. What was that? It was more in the longevity space.
We are doing a lot of trying to understand. What we found is that a lot of women don't have a good primary care doctor who is getting their blood tests, getting their genetic tests, helping them to understand, you know, what are the things they can be doing in their 30s, 40s, and 50s so that they're healthy
mm-hmm.
in their 70s and 80s.
Right.
And so Kathleen has actually been working a lot on figuring out what are the genetic tests, what are the blood biomarkers, like what are the things you should be testing now to help you be healthier later, and then how do we optimize?
Okay, tell us, Kathleen.
All right.
Tell us all the secrets. What do we test now? What are your favorite panels to kind of just dive right in?
Okay, so I do want to start with hormones because that's where we started. And it is, I think, what an underrated aging well drug. I like
mm-hmm.
to say aging well versus longevity. Because it's about living well,
mm-hmm.
not just, you
living
know, living longer.
Right.
But both is ideal. That's
mm-hmm.
aging well. So hormones are in of themselves a tool.
Mm-hmm.
They've been linked to better bone health, decreased frailty, lower fractures, which then leads, and women, 50% of women are going to have a major fracture, right?
Mm-hmm.
It also has been linked to vascular pliability. So you see, it also changes your metabolism, so you have better lipid panels, and all of this addresses cardiovascular disease, and cardiovascular disease leads to obviously mortality, but also it leads to vascular dementia, and women are disproportionately affected by dementia.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think hormones are one component, and you were asking Joanna sort of how we got into longevity. Well, because this is one tool, people want to know more, or they want to compare it to other things they
mm-hmm.
can do as well. So we And also, we're across the nation, we see huge gaps in care of just primary care and prevention and wellness. So we're helping to fill that gap too while we're doing hormone care. But I look at it as sort of three big ones,
mm-hmm.
right? So cardiovascular disease, we want to both screen for it and prevent it. Cancer, we want to screen for it optimally and prevent it. And then dementia. So, I mean, women get dementia twice as much as men.
Wow.
And it's a big fear, and it starts to become very real in midlife. Some people get brain fog, right, so which is a sort of brain metabolic stressor that's not progressive and it's not dementia, and
mm-hmm.
It's very treatable in menopause, but that triggers them to be concerned that they might have developing Alzheimer's, or they're taking care of their parents that have Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
So we both help with screening as well as sort of review evidence-based ways to try and prolong mental health as well.
So it's interesting, there is so much data that shows that women at the peak of their careers, when they start getting these brain fog episodes, they themselves will voluntarily retire or pull themselves out of work and just change. Taking all that institutional knowledge out of a company, out of a business, And then, you know, what societal impact does that have?
Oh, this has been
leaders.
Yeah, it's been studied. Yeah, there was a Mass General study. I think it's 50% of women say that they did not apply for a promotion because of symptoms of menopause.
Yeah.
I mean, when I see, they're exhausted.
Exhausted, and you start forgetting names and basic things, and then you wonder about your own skills, and then you have to, like, really, like, think about how you're going to fix that. What are some of your solutions? Like, do you look at genetic or epigenetics in your menopause treatment plans? How do you know someone's at risk for dementia?
There's a lot of questions in there. Okay, so we do... Well, first I want to say, so the genetic risks don't impact whether you can benefit from hormone replacement therapy. Because by and large, hormone therapy isn't going to change that risk factor. So you can actually have BRCA even, right? So that does put you at higher risk for breast cancer, but being on hormones or not on hormones doesn't change that risk. So you can sort of qualify for that separately. Now, if you have BRCA, we're also going to make sure that you're getting the right treatment for that, which is going to be up-leveled screenings, probably a surgical referral, things like that. Same for, like, other genetic risk factors. I would say the one that interplays commonly is factor V gliadin, which is a clotting disorder. About 5% of women will have it. Most of them can take hormone therapy because they're heterogeneous. If they're homozygous, it can, the interplay with estrogen can increase their clot risk a little. So we do actually inform our care by it, but by and large, most of the genetic risk factors don't impact whether you can go on hormone therapy or not.
Interesting. Are there any specific women who you would absolutely exclude from hormone therapy?
Someone who is on a hormone blocker, right?
Yeah.
So for a treatment for breast cancer. So the largest group is someone with a currently diagnosed breast cancer, because those breast cancers, particularly the ones later in life, have estrogen receptors. So they will often be treated, usually for the first few years, with a hormone blocker to try and shrink those cells. I wouldn't say I don't treat them, though. I would just not address their symptoms with hormone therapy. There's lots of other things to do. So we're not just a hormone company, right? So the symptoms of menopause, everybody gets. Every woman gets. It's not a niche. It's half the population are going to get symptoms. Some people, hormone therapy is an option. Other people, it's going to be supplements. There's other prescription meds you can take. There's Veozah for hot flashes. There's things you can do for sleep. There's
lots. Don't give up on yourself. Even if you have a breast cancer diagnosis, you're not designed to suffer the rest of your life, right?
Absolutely.
Because I do see people in that mindset.
Yeah.
I have breast cancer, I'm not taking anything, can't do anything.
Well, and they can use topical, right?
Yeah.
You probably see, so you can, there are still safe ways to use topical estrogens.
That don't go systemically.
Right.
Yeah.
So probably the two biggest would be for skin, so people are interested on, you know, sort of face and neck, but also the genitourinary symptoms. But Joanna, you were talking about how people say I'm through menopause. The skin changes and the genitourinary stuff continues.
Yeah.
Well, it continues to worsen
so
the whole life.
When people tell me that they're done with menopause, so they don't need anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, your body is actually not done.
You need another t-shirt. It's going to be like, you're never done with menopause. That's so slightly depressing, but... But it's a fact of life, like we're never done aging.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so it's a very interesting mindset. People tell me this all the time. Like, no, your skin is continuing to age. That is related to estrogen. That is menopause. And your vaginal wall is continuing to get thinner. Let's do something about that. So, yeah, it's a weird mindset that we have.
Yeah, and using these estrogens can definitely improve all the symptoms of dryness, no lubrication, urinary dysfunction, like burning, irritation.
Bone health.
Skin health.
Skin health. I definitely
see people with thinning skin,
right.
Dermal atrophy, and increased skin changes when they're not on. Your skin really hits the wall, like as soon as you go into menopause. People report that first year after menopause, they lose so much collagen production. They've done studies that show that it plummets by 20% almost. And so you have a new formulation for a topical estrogen, right?
We do.
Tell us about it.
Do you want to talk about it? Or do
I use it, but why do you
talk
about it? I really think I look
try
better.
It too.
I am 100% sure that I look better.
Well,
So I feel really good about it, but why don't you explain?
Yeah, well, as you know, what you just mentioned is that as our as our skin depletes in estrogen, you lose a lot of collagen, particularly the first years. But it's ongoing, and your skin gets thin, mm-hmm. your pore size increases. And when you add estrogen back topically, your pore size will decrease, your collagen deposition improves by 30% mm-hmm. if you're using it regularly, and your skin resilience and turgor actually improve.
Gets firm again versus then, where you get that loss of elasticity, laxity.
Right, so we added DMAE and hyaluronic acid as well, which are also just sort of hydrating. Mm-hmm. DMAE helps with brightness. So the one thing with estrogen on the skin, I think it works beautifully. It helps with hydration, collagen, skin, you know, thickness, but it can pick up pigmentation. So we add a brightener, so it mm-hmm. actually counteracts that, and it actually is beautiful.
That's one of the most common questions, is estrogen topically going to stimulate hyperpigmentation? So using a concurrent brightener is a good way around that.
But yes.
Okay.
Yeah, or some people will just avoid areas that they see some hyperpigmentation. There's not
Don't apply it directly on your melasma, for example.
Yeah,
so I think that's going to be such a game changer. So that, especially for tissues like the neck, and around mm-hmm. the eyes, wherever there's really thin texture with not enough oils in the skin, I feel like.
What do you think about hands?
Yeah, I think you should.
I've been thinking about
the
hands.
I think
for the back of your hands, I think it could also really impact.
Yeah, I think it works also in conjunction with our collagen biostimulator injections, which I'd love to maybe do a deep dive and see if there's even any research published on that. But I feel that when we treat skin that's hormone depleted versus hormone resilient, that we see different results with collagen stimulators. But I feel like that's an interesting study we should actually do to get data on, because I think you'd get better, you know, collagen growth and stimulation of the fibroblasts and all of that. So there we have it. Maybe wants to sponsor a study.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's making me think of a small study that, you know, GLP-1s are a lot people are using them to help lose weight. But if you actually are on hormone therapy systemic, you actually get a better response to the drug.
To GLP-1s,
So they've actually done some smaller studies or doing bigger studies. So it does seem to affect your global response to other interventions as well.
So interesting. Now, what age should we start to worry about perimenopause? Because do you guys see the trend that it's happening younger and younger, like in the late 30s, people are starting to have perimenopausal symptoms?
So I think they have always had perimenopausal symptoms. I don't
think
they're starting. I just don't think we knew what they were.
We didn't define it
Define it. And we have this weird idea. I'm always joking. Peri equals pre. But instead, we have this idea that it's only a very short period of time before menopause. But, you know, the research shows estrogen goes like this, right? And it just goes down. So perimenopause is just it's just your estrogen going down, right? Which happens to women in their 30s and 40s. And so I think we have to stop thinking of, like, you're not in perimenopause. You are. You're pre-menopause.
We all are.
Exactly.
20.
Yes. After 20, you are pre-menopause.
Yeah.
So I think it's a different thought process, in the same way that menopause is not the end.
Yeah.
I don't think so many women say, I'm not in perimenopause yet. I'm like, well, of course you are in perimenopause, because you're pre-menopause, and you know your estrogen is fluctuating, and that's what we're responding to.
What do you test for biomarkers for that? Are you, when you're looking for the transitional stage and their risk profile for entering menopause, is it FSH? And
it's a great question.
Okay.
So, what happens in the 5 to 10 years before you hit menopause is you actually go on a roller coaster of hormones.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've talked about the neuroendocrine axis, right?
Mm-hmm.
So our ovaries stop making estrogen and progesterone as much as we used to. We stop making our follicles and eggs because we have a finite number of them. We have a feedback loop, so temporarily your FSH will then respond by making a high FSH. Then you get your ovaries will do a surge of estrogen progesterone. Then you actually get a lower FSH. So what
you're cycling a lot.
So you're seeing it. So people call it the roller coaster of perimenopause. They call it the chaos of perimenopause. And what's super interesting is there's some data coming out, the Menopausal Brain Book with Lisa Moscone. There's some bone health studies. There's a lot of studies coming out that roller coaster can, for some people, be harder than sort of the flat line that you get post-menopause. The swings and the deltas are very hard on emotions, lability, really hard on sleep. I think these are the women I see coming in day after day that really can't sleep. and they feel out of control, and we talked about earlier, quit their job. Mm-hmm. But when you look for biomarkers, the problem is your hormones are on this roller coaster, so you can have terrible symptoms, and then we check your FSH and estradiol, and it tests high because that day it's high. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times you want to test multiple in the same cycle at different points, and you'll get a little bit better information, but that's pretty onerous. So if you're in the typical age for perimenopause, if you're in your late 40s or even your early 40s with classic symptoms, we can treat you. We often will get at least one blood draw to just ballpark you, but a lot of, you can actually, in the guidelines, we'll say to treat if you have symptoms in the classic age.
So I'm going to ask a question about this, because you and I talk about this, but I'm not sure I've actually asked you this. Because we now know that hormones are probably one of the best longevity medications, right? Mm-hmm. We know that it has good emerging evidence that it's good for cardiovascular health, that it's good for your bone health, that it's good for your brain health. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't we want to treat everyone? Like, why wouldn't you, in your 30s, regardless of whether you had perimenopause symptoms, why wouldn't you take hormones?
I want to know the answer to that too.
Well, I would say the majority of people that come have a conversation at MIDI and talk about the risks and benefits for their personal history, whether it be a clotting history, a family history of breast cancer, BRCA, whatever. Most of them do lead with hormone therapy because I do think most women can benefit from hormone replacement therapy. There's some amazing studies out of Cedars-Sinai that actually show improved longevity, 30% lower calcium scores. Calcium scores is a test on your atherosclerosis and cardiovascular disease. Mm-hmm. So there is a mounting amount of evidence that it's good for long-term health. So, I mean, I certainly take hormone therapy. There are a few people where it can increase the risk. Breast cancer is one. It also depends on the formulation. So oral estrogen in particular can interfere with the clotting pathways, because it goes through the liver. So oral estrogens, remember, like birth control pills have estrogen and progesterone. They're a form of hormone therapy. Mm-hmm. Birth control pills, we know, have a slightly increased risk of clots. It doesn't prohibit us from giving them oral contraceptives. But if you have an elevated risk of clots, we're going to probably only talk to you about transdermals. And then certain clotting disorders can interfere. So we would have we have several clotting specialists at MIDI, so we can walk you through that. But even many of them qualify for hormone therapy. So I would say the majority do benefit. I would say everyone can benefit from topicals, meaning the intravaginal applications and or the skin.
So why wouldn't we give everyone who does not have breast cancer or does not have a clotting disease, why in their 30s would we say we have to wait until you're perimenopausal?
Oh, because they're making their own native estrogen. So about 6% of women go into early menopause, which means their final menopause is below 45. So back that up 5 to 10 years. That means about 6% are probably getting symptoms in their 30s. Identifying who is going into early or late is hard to do in your late 30s. What's exciting, though, is there's more and more literature. In the last couple years, there's been some bone health studies that show that you're actually starting to lose bone in late perimenopause. So traditionally, our best studies were about starting hormone therapy at full menopause. But there's more and more studies, because we have lab tests available more frequently. We have home testing now, right, with things like UVA and Prove, right? So we're making the testing more readily available and raising awareness. So people are more aware when they're in perimenopause, and then we have studies that show actually the skin loss, the bone loss, start definitely in late perimenopause.
Hmm. Are these home tests blood tests that you get done that you can check for your hormones?
They're urine tests.
Oh, urine tests.
But
and what are the names of them again for people listening?
There's one called UVA, there's one called PROOV, P-R-O-O-V, and remember I mentioned it, it's a roller coaster, so sometimes you'll test high or low. What the home tests do is they make it easier for you to test multiple times in a month without having to go wait 2 hours at a lab.
But I like your question. I think in some ways everyone is on hormones, because in your 20s, the majority of the world is on birth control.
Yeah.
Like, so, right. And then you're stabilized a little bit with your hormones, and then it's when you get when you want to get pregnant, you go off your birth control, and then a few years later, you're still not back on birth control because now you have a kid and you know, right. Maybe that's when you're in your late 30s.
So but you're natively making estrogen.
Yeah, you already have.
You're making it really until you get into perimenopause.
Right. Then we just don't know when.
And then it's hard to know when to start. Definitely start if you're getting symptoms.
Some people I was reading were equating menopause to puberty. It's like that time in your life when your hormones are up and down all over the place.
Yeah.
And right. That's what's the really symptomatic phase that you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's very hard to control. Like you said, it's much easier once things level out and it's kind of burned its way out.
Although you still are getting ongoing skin changes, skin thinning, you're still getting bone loss, you're still getting genitourinary changes. So I think even if you're in the sort of, you know, that final phase where you're at sort of lower amounts of estrogen, I think those people should still have the conversation too. Even if you're 50%.
So if you're a woman who never went on any hormone therapy because of all of the doctors of the 80s who said you couldn't do it, and you're 60, 70 years old right now, would you still put them on hormone replacement for these benefits for the bones and the brain?
I would definitely have very easy open access for the topicals.
Yeah.
For women who are more than 10 years from menopause, and or have a lot of established cardiovascular disease, so you have a lot of blockages, when we give you hormone therapy, it can relax your blood vessels and sort of disrupt some of that. So I'd have a risk-benefit conversation with you, but I would want to know if you have a lot of established atherosclerosis. The risk-benefit conversation gets a little different. But that's mostly people really, you know, late 60s, unless they have a lot of cardiovascular risks, like diabetes, familial hyperlipidemia, or we know they've had heart attacks or something.
But it's important for women to understand you haven't missed the boat just because you didn't
start definitely not.
The routine.
But we will, so to clarify, if you don't have high risk of heart disease, then we would enable someone to start taking hormones. They get some benefits even if it's post 10 years after menopause.
I think the risk-benefit ratio is very clear for people within 10 years of menopause. And after 10 years of menopause, we have a risk-benefit conversation, so it depends. Like if you have osteopenia and your risks are high, I would say it probably favors taking it. So then it's a more nuanced discussion.
Very case by case. But it's important to ask. That's the main.
Well, and that's actually, I think, a great place for me, because I would say most community clinicians don't have the nuance or the expertise to walk through some of these, you know, newly genetically recognized lipid disorders, like all sorts, and how it interplays with hormones. So I think that's been a really meaningful part of the MIDI offering.
Yeah, I think the other important thing that we were starting to get into is like the other impacts for menopause would be sarcopenia, loss of muscle mass. It's huge. Bone density you talked about. What about visceral fat accumulation? How does that change with and without hormones?
Well, it's the number one question from women, menopause and perimenopause, right? It's the bad fat. It's the central weight gain. So instead of our hourglass figure or pear-shaped figure, you start to gain it centrally, and central weight gain is associated with worse cardiovascular outcomes. So once our belly or waist is bigger than our hips, it's called the hip to waist ratio, we start to see more cardiovascular disease. And that's sort of a crude measure of visceral fat. It's the at-home measure you can do. So, and that is definitely known to be associated with menopause. We also know that on average women would gain more weight because your metabolism changes, your insulin sensitivities change. 40% get pre-diabetes. That is definitely, we've known
that's
that. The WHI study showed this. The people on hormones had less full diabetes. So pre-diabetes is a huge thing for women in midlife. 40% of us, that's a lot. And that's more strokes, more heart attacks. 30% will turn into full diabetes with all that brings. So I think pre-diabetes is a time to sort of lean in to global health. But definitely take a look at hormone health if you're female, because it can help.
So what do we do at MIDI for the visceral, for the belly fat?
What do we do?
What do we do?
What do we do?
I mean, everybody's putting themselves on semaglutides already.
Oh, now you're bringing up the topic that gets me really excited. Because I actually love the GLP-1 drugs, which is the semaglutide, tirzepatide, Mounjaro, Zepbound, all those. They are incredible. And I think people don't realize that in 2 years, I mean, this study is published, in 2 years they reduced deaths, strokes, and heart attacks by 20%. I mean, in my career, I haven't seen any other drug or tool that we've hit that has hit the market that can be that impactful. Mm-hmm. So I think they're incredible. They're incredibly effective. I see them every day at MIDI transform people's lives. It helps them take ownership. They feel great. They feel that they look great, but you know, it's also about their health.
Yeah.
It's their mental health, it's their full health. Yeah.
You guys are prescribing semaglutide.
So we do prescribe it. Now, they're a prescription drug for a reason, so I don't want women going necessarily to the back of hairdresser salons and getting it off the street. Yes. I'd much rather them be getting it from a qualified provider. So everyone at MIDI knows how to supervise the care, how to do it safely, which they're incredibly, not only safe, I think they're incredibly effective, mm-hmm. and I think are going to add to the life expectancy of the people we treat.
That's some very big innovation to be able to provide all of that under one roof. I think that's outstanding. What kind of longitudinal data are you guys looking at with health outcomes? I hope that you guys at some level are tracking the women's improvements that you're seeing.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we're going to have the biggest data set in the world, I think, for women in this age category. And we're tracking what impact they're having with the GLP-1s. We're tracking impact of hormones. We're tracking impact of supplements. So, right, so where people, we're getting information about what supplements they're taking and whether they're improving. Mm-hmm. So we are excited to have all this data and to be able to educate the world on this group of women and how to mm-hmm. treat them better.
That's incredible. And then in the platform, women can get communications with their provider, with their labs, like just
all
like
it,
a lot of the EMRs out there. But
yes, and we'll integrate with your other EMR. So we use a very basic EMR that integrates with others so we can share information with your other doctors.
Oh, wonderful. And then are you leveraging kind of digital or remote monitoring or, you know, wearing devices like an Oura Ring or an app in your phone?
You know, we are supportive of whatever people want to use. We don't necessarily need that data to treat you, mm-hmm. but we are absolutely supportive of whatever people are interested in using.
Oh, good. So your physician can look at that data if you have
yeah.
it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that would be useful to look at sleep variability and heart rate variability as you get on progesterone and your sleep improves?
Yes, I'm glad you asked it because we are looking at wearables to incorporate into our program a little more routinely. We're an insurance-covered platform, and we don't have a lot of insurance coverage on these yet, so mm-hmm. it's not absolutely necessary, as Joanna said, but if you have access to the tools, I think
yeah.
they're incredible.
It's just icing on the cake right now.
It is.
Yeah.
But there's a lot we can do for sleep. I mean, people know when they've slept better, so we ask them, how is their sleep? So we definitely get the data. Or I have patients that will borrow their friend's wearable just for a couple weeks when we do an intervention to see.
Yeah.
So there's ways people, women are creative.
That we are. Are men allowed on the MIDI platform, or is that not a thing?
They are allowed, yes. They are allowed. We do not discriminate at MIDI.
Right.
We absolutely do
or
not discriminate.
People define themselves, men.
However you define, actually what happens is usually a woman comes to us, and then she tells her husband to come too. And so we do take care of men. I mean, we're obviously focused on women's health, but we do have male patients who are coming to us and we will take care of them too.
I want to open the whole andropause question too, because like, why are we only talking about menopause? Men go through some of the same changes with centripetal weight gain and,
mm-hmm.
you know, crankiness and loss of testosterone and all that.
It's a little bit less dramatic though than for women.
Yeah.
So if you look at the testosterone.
Imagine
so,
if they had to handle a period or anything like
that. Well, actually, women and men both sort of slowly decline in testosterone.
Yes.
Like 1% a year. So about 1% a year. But when you're talking about estrogen changes from like this, you know, ovary stopping, you're talking about levels of 300-400 going to below 10 after menopause.
Yeah, it's a sudden drop.
So it's a roller coaster drop, even worse. Mm-hmm. So men don't have that dramatic sort of period of decline. There is sort of a general aging process with the slower testosterone.
Do you think that's why men age better sometimes physically, externally?
They don't live as long, though. It's interesting. Just remember. I think there's a lot in there. I think it's also societal measures of what beauty is.
Yes.
So men are allowed to be a silver fox, whereas
yes.
women, there's no such complimentary phrase usually.
That's it's interesting because I've had men ask about our estrogen cream and if it would work for them. And
I have looked and looked, there's no data, but I don't think their skin's going through the distress that ours are.
Right.
So I would doubt it.
Thicker, better padded dermis, and it stays that way. And I think I debate about whether it's from every day they're shaving and it's like microdermabrasion every single day, or like they have better microcirculation because the hair follicles of the face are thicker. But
and there's lots of other things they can do. The tretinoins still help them.
Yeah, retinol guys should be on that. And did you know that I just recently was reading an article on bone remodeling and I realized it said in there that men's bone tissue requires estrogen to deposit bone. Did you know that? I did never knew that in all of med school. So I'm like, I did not know men need estrogen to have bone density.
Well, and women need testosterone. This whole funny thing that we think testosterone is a male hormone and estrogen's female.
Yeah.
We actually, both sexes need both.
Exactly.
Which is why we get upset that for testosterone, there's, I think, all these different FDA-approved formulations for men. But there's none for women, which because they're not FDA approved, insurances don't cover it. So it's it's an access barrier for women.
Who do we have in Congress who's like a representative that's going to be vocal about this for women's health?
The hard thing is that it's generic, so no, there's no money involved.
But it should be a public right.
I am obviously with you. I spent a bunch of time last year lobbying about this because they were thinking about making it. The DEA was seriously considering not allowing any telehealth prescribing of testosterone, which was ridiculous. So I spent a bunch of time talking to people about this. And, you know, if you think about rural healthcare, for example, like people drive hours to get to go to the doctor. And so to make it so that you had to drive hours to get this basic medication just felt very inequitable to me.
Yeah, good for you. Well, if there's anything we can do to support that cause,
think that.
But we're also doing it through employers. Yeah, through employers ultimately define sort of the parameters or the health plan for their employees. So we work with them a lot. There's a rise in sort of FSA and HSA plans and amounts allowed there. That can often cover compounding. So there's angles.
There's ways.
And I do think the whole GLP-1 conversation is changing that, is pressuring them, because they want the compounded versions because they're so much more financially accessible for their employees, our patients, their employees.
Employers want that.
Employers would love to cover compounding because they're more affordable.
Yeah.
Right, so I think there's some pressures that are happening in the market that will I'm going to be optimistic.
I don't know if Eli Lilly will allow that. The big pharma is kind of shutting down compounding now that there's no more drug shortages.
But liraglutide's off patent. So we have, they're all rolling off patent in the next couple of years. These drugs have been around much longer than people think.
Yeah.
Like liraglutide's 15 years. It came off patent this year. So there's a generic available now. So you can compound that all you like. And then the others are going to roll off in the next couple of years.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, do you feel like there are advances coming that you want to preview for the audience? Like any new tech or new things you're reading about?
Any new stuff. I think there's a lot in the supplement world. You know, I think traditional medicine has dismissed supplements as being not science-y. But there's been a lot of investment in trials on this, so we see some exciting new things coming from there that actually are impactful. In the GLP-1 world, there's, I think, 18 that are expected to come to market in the coming years.
Yeah.
But some of them are, we're going to see oral, because right now it's injectable, which is intimidating to some people. And we're going to see some of them are, there's one coming out that's going to be a monthly injection, so you don't even have to worry about the travel or some making it easier to incorporate into your lifestyle. So lots of changes, progress there. And we also are seeing ones that are targeted more specifically. So the biggest side effect of GLP-1s is the nausea and the sort of the slow gut. So they're fine tuning them to sort of to allow a little bit better gut motility. So they're just going to get better and better and better. And I get that question a lot, like, if I start this, do I have to stay on it for life? I'm like, there is no way you're going to stay on this for life.
Thanks.
One, there's going to be better options. Two, you actually can come off, like, people can definitely come off these drugs very successfully mm-hmm. and maintain their lifestyle and weight that were reinforced when they were on the drug.
How about hormone-wise? Am I ever going to get, like, a continuous glucose monitor? Will there be a continuous estrogen monitor that can sense my levels and then allow me to very precisely dose where I need to be for this time and age?
You're talking to a number of companies that are working on making these.
Are you really? That's
yeah. Cortisol monitors, too.
Yeah,
there are a number of startups that are looking at cortisol monitors and hormone monitors. So
yeah.
I'm optimistic in the next few years this will come out.
Interesting. And is there a graph that's going to detail, like, at this age you need this much estrogen? It's just going to be very individual specific.
Yes, and I think the perimenopausal market is really where it's demanding this, right? The consumer is demanding it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first start of this is these home urine tests, but we're going to see more and more coming on the market.
Very interesting. What do you predict for MIDI? Extreme growth this coming next decade?
You know, I'm really excited that women are going to have the option to get high quality care from their house. I joke a lot that the conversations that MIDI is having, whether we're talking about your vaginal wall or whether you're talking about sleep or anxiety or even the hot flash conversations, they're actually really well suited for telehealth. It's actually much easier to have that conversation from your bedroom than it is going to a doctor's office.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited about the potential for telehealth. I think obviously in-person care is always going to have a huge role for when you need to see people in person, but there's just a lot that you can do via telehealth, and it's more accessible, takes a lot less time to get to, and I think it enables really good relationships with your providers. So I'm excited about how that's going to evolve.
That's exciting. And for you, exciting things ahead at MIDI?
Oh, I'm really excited about some of the advances in genetic testing as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we're working to develop a female-specific genetic testing, right? Because men don't need to be screened for uterine cancer or
yeah.
cervical cancer, right? Breast cancer. So there's polygenic risk scores, which it's not as simple as just testing for BRCA. There's, 20 different genes have been associated with higher. So I think we're going to get into more screenings that are genetic. And there's also genetic risk factors for metabolizing drugs differently.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to see dosing based on your specific genes, which I think will explain why, as Joanna said, now we're titrating to symptoms and somewhat to drug levels, right? So some people require more estrogen than others
mm-hmm.
or different formulations. But if we can understand how you metabolize these, we can actually just give them to you at the right dose, right style from the get-go. So there's tons of stuff coming out.
We're also, I know you're looking at this too, peptides.
Yes.
Right? So there's a lot of really exciting science
mm-hmm.
coming out about peptides, and so we're staying on top of that and figuring out how to get women access to that.
I think that's going to be so important, especially for women who can't take estrogens. I feel that there will
mm-hmm.
be a peptide that can hopefully accomplish some of the goals or
yeah.
even treat some of the side effects and symptoms that we have.
Yeah, I'm very optimistic about
yeah.
that.
And NAD, I was recently reading, helps reduce ovarian aging and delays onset of menopause. So
oh, that's great.
So interesting. Yeah, a lot of fresh and up-and-coming research. Well, I'm so excited to have introduced MIDI and both of you powerhouse ladies to our audience. Where can people find you, Joanna, to catch more information or connect with you?
Just super easy. It's just joinmidi.com. And also, we put a lot of information on Instagram. Kathleen is always on Instagram talking about the most recent data, but yeah, you can book a visit at joinmidi.com, and then you can also follow us also on Reddit. We have a community on Reddit that we've started where we're answering questions.
Okay, what's the
so
name of it?
I think it's just search, go to Google and search Reddit
search
and MIDI.
I think it might be under my name.
And do you have a personal Instagram or you're just under?
I do also have a personal Instagram.
What's
I don't
that?
Post as often,
oh, you don't?
Just my name for Joanna Strober. Yes.
Joanna Strober, at Joanna Strober. And then how about you, Kathleen? Where
I just do the MIDI
you?
Posting.
On the MIDI page. What's
on
the
MIDI page.
Instagram handle?
It's at MIDI Health.
Okay, there
yeah.
you go.
At MIDI
Health. It's MIDI. You guys have to check it out. Well, that's it for now, guys. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, D-R-K-A-Y, and doing amazing things with people's faces, health and longevity, too. And our website is the same, it's beautybydrk.com, and that's where you can find our amazing skincare line. Look forward to the summer launch of our peptide-based skincare with NAD precursors and transuxamic acids, all the brighteners, all the things you need for this perimenopause journey. I hope you learned so much today. Thank you, ladies, for coming on and teaching us about pre and peri and postmenopause.
Yeah, thank you for spreading the word.
Thank you.
Love you guys. Stay beautiful.
Yeah.